Good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to be talking about car repair issues. My name is Mark Salem. I've been on local radio in Phoenix since 1988, talking about cars. And you probably can't come up with a question that I haven't had before, but nevertheless, we're going to ask you questions as well, like what's the symptoms, what's going on, has anybody looked at it yet, does it spit water out the tailpipe, is the check engine light on? That's the kind of conversation we have. So if you give us a call, you give us your name, and then just tell us, I've got this kind of car, your make and model, maybe mileage, and here's the symptoms. Okay, that's what's important, is the symptoms, because it doesn't really make any difference what the young three-whiskered kid said at the auto parts store, because his ability to diagnose the problem from a check engine light is no better than mine, and I'm a master technician, and I've been working on cars since 1973 in a gas station, and I opened my own shop in 1979. So it's really easy to say that you can fix things like that, but really and truly it's more symptomatic. So 602-508-0960. Sitting next here next to me is my daughter Andy. Andy runs our operation, and she is in charge. The biggest problem Andy has is her brother, but in spite of that, she's in charge of all the men at the shop. And so how's that working out for you?
Lovely.
Have you called anybody up to your office yet?
Oh, I mean, this week, no.
No, from the employee point of view?
Yeah, nobody.
Okay.
Nobody this week.
Okay, all right. But every once in a while you call them up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or we have a group powwow.
Okay. So a kumbaya kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody holds hands?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever did that in my office. Your mom said that somebody got called upstairs, the door shut, the yelling started.
Yeah.
It's the old days.
Yeah. Your ways wouldn't work today, but yeah, sure.
Perhaps not. But those guys like Ron and Eddie, who have been with us north of 30 years, mm-hmm. they still remember the old days.
Oh, yeah.
They remember seeing other people walk in employed and walk out unemployed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's okay. I'm real proud of both you and Alan, because you guys have just taken over the administration and handling of the repair shop, and you've broke every record that Mom and I had.
Mm-hmm.
And we started together in 1979.
Yeah.
So in every way, shape, or form, new customers, profit on labor, profit on parts, and you've gone above us, but not into what I would call obscene.
Yeah.
You know, somebody who brags about 80% profit on labor, they're not paying their technicians much, or their labor rate is sky high. So
yeah.
You can kind of spiel those numbers out as you
sure.
go along. But anyway, let's go to Leonard, because he's been waiting. He called first. Anybody else would like to call? The answer, the easy thing to do is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. No matter what part of the country you're in, give us a call. Leonard, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I've got a 202 Buell Sabre's got 65,000 miles on it, and I'm concerned about the cooling system. It's all rusty. It comes out rusty. So the question is, so can I put a rust inhibitor in it, or just don't bother with it? And I have a follow-up question.
Okay. Why don't we just flush the heck out of it right now?
Yeah, that's what I would say, too. Just flush it a few times.
Yeah, well, let's just go. Now, we're never going to get all the rust out of the radiator and the heater core. For that's just because it settles to the bottom and it's going to have a red color. But to be perfectly honest with you, the red color doesn't bother me. And I'll tell you why. We're going to use a meter to look at the coolant, and we want it to be 50-50, which gives you protection on the freezing point down to 32. So you can have the rustiest old water-looking stuff in your radiator but still hit the 32 mark and be fine. So I'm not real sure that I would get too wound up about this. But I would find somebody who's capable of power flushing it out, and then putting back in with 50-50.
Well, it was flushed just a couple of years ago, so it comes right back now. It's rusted again.
Yeah.
Well, so I thought maybe just a rust inhibitor in there. Would that help?
Well, the rust inhibitor is no. Well, let me just tell you, we don't use that. We
yeah.
don't think that there's any okay. benefit to it.
I mean, there's times right. where, depending on how much they flushed it the first time, you're still going to have remnants of rust and things like that.
Okay.
It doesn't, even one flush won't fully take care of it. But maybe if you do it on a more consistent basis, or the shop does it a couple times, you know, while it's there, that will help.
I remember, Leonard, a long time ago, there was a gentleman who insisted that we clean all the rust out of his car. And so we sent the radiator off to the radiator shop, and he says, without pulling the tank, I can't clean the rust out of this, and that's going to cost $100. So then we thought, well, we'll just inject some high-pressure water into the thermostat housing and do our best to wash out the cylinder walls. We worked on that thing for probably 4, 5, 6 hours, and it still had rust the next day. But, Leonard, if your rusty-looking coolant had a freeze point of 32 degrees, no harm, no foul. Everything is fine. It's just got a color to it, that's all.
Yeah.
I would send my grandkids, if you wanted to take them to California, to Disneyland, I'd send them in your car with you if you want.
But this is a clue for me. So going on time here, so when I just open my car and I just look at the front of some time, and I see nothing there. So one day, all of a sudden, I see some rust on the ground. Then I know I got a leak in the cooling system. So it's like a check on the system, like a cooling system, whether it's got a leak or not.
No, well, that's easy, though. How much is a pressure test and look for a leak?
Oh, $45.
Okay, so you take it into the shop. They pull the radiator cap off of it. They put a pressure tester on there. The cap holds 18 pounds. Yes. They put in 18 pounds. Actually, I cheat. I go 19 pounds. And then we just wait for the leak to occur. And then we follow the leak up to where it's at, and then we bid the repair. This could be a hose clamp. This could be a freeze plug. This could be a water pump. This could be an overflow jug that's got a crack in it. No. So it's not that big of a deal. But, yes, I agree that if you got something on the ground, we need to pressure test it and find out what. We're just going to put an air pump on the system and pump it up. And whatever's leaking is going to leak, and we're going to find it. Okay?
Well, the bottom line is, until I see something on the ground that's orange, I just don't bother with it.
Yes. Yes, exactly. I don't make it an issue. It's not an issue.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay. I want to have a follow-up question on my brakes, Mike. Where they need to be cut, I've had my brakes replaced twice now, but they did not cut the rotor. I didn't want to cut because I want so I'd be able to have another down the road, be able to get another one. So I didn't have them cut, but I see no experience in bumping, rumping, or vibration at all on hard deceleration. They run just real smooth on the brakes, so I didn't have them cut. So what do you think about me having them cut again? Because the front's got 32,000 on them, the rear's got 29. It's getting pretty close to replacing them. This time I should have them cut this time, I suppose, right?
Yeah, I mean, typically we always replace the pads and resurface the rotors, cut, resurface the rotors, same thing. But they can also measure the rotors to make sure that when they cut them, they're not leaving them too thin.
Well, see, and Leonard, Leonard, on the back of your rotor, but here's something I'm hearing. You've already been on your second brake job. You've never had a pulsating brake pedal. You just got through saying that it's as smooth as glass. There's nothing to fix here, buddy. Your rotors could be 20,000ths the thickness of three hairs. They could be three hairs thinner than brand new ones. But we got a lot of room there. So don't fret over that. The real issue is when the pedal begins to pulsate, then we've got a wheel bearing problem or we've got a warped rotor.
Yes.
And that's all. If you don't have that problem, you got nothing going on.
No, that's it. I have no problem at all on hard deceleration. No problem at all on braking at all.
Throw that rotor issue out of your head. It's not an issue.
Oh,
they're working.
One thing I like about the again race with legs, even though maybe they don't need them because it's getting late, is to get the wheel bearings repacked, and that's what I like about that idea. Mm-hmm.
Well, you said it was a Buick LeSabre, right?
Yes.
Okay, it's a front wheel drive.
Yes, 65,000 miles on it.
I don't think it has wheel bearings on it. I think they're sealed, but I could be wrong, and I have been wrong before. But I think you've got some sealed, and you can say to them, check to see if I need wheel bearings, and they'll come back and say, no, they're fine, or no, they're sealed. And we replace them when they start making noise, that's all.
Or repack them if it could be done, can we just repack them?
No. If they're sealed bearings, there's no repacking them. You replace the bearing assembly that comes with the bearing, inner and outer race. It comes with all the balls or the bearing inside, and then there's two pieces of plastic on either side of it that are sealed, and it's filled with its own grease. So that's how you'd have it. Anyway, thank you, Leonard. Those were great questions. A great way to start off the show. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open no matter what part of the country you're at. It's 10 o'clock here in Phoenix, and we're going to go till noon. So for the next 2 hours, we're going to talk about cars and stuff like that. But let me tell you, if you're in Phoenix, about some shops. Shops that I know the owners, and I'm telling you, you should go there if you live in their geographical area, because they're very good. And Action Auto Repair is one of them at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. His technicians are ASE Master Certified. They get the job done well. And here's what it means when you're ASE Certified. You've passed all the tests that talk about a particular kind of car. And it could be Buick, it could be Chevrolet, but there's a lot of questions that are very generic. When you pass the test, you have to recertify every 2 or 3 years or 5 years, I think it is, every 5 years. And so you just recertify, you recertify. When you're a master tech, you've passed all 8 automotive tests. So you just didn't do brakes, which is one, or front end, which is one, or air conditioning, which is one test. Mm-hmm. You've passed all of them. And when you're a master tech, you've passed all of the tests. And I've been a master tech since 1991. And so actually I got to retire not too long ago and keep my my certification. Anyway, Tom is a great guy. He's up at I-17 in Deer Valley. If you live up there and you don't have a repair shop, may I suggest that you you go to him. You had a question on from one of the social media circles the other day from a lady I thought was interesting. What was your answer? Because I don't know.
Oh, she had asked. She said she was interested in a Subaru, and she just said that the owner or whoever had told her it had a head gasket leak or issue, and or needs a head gasket is what she said, and there was a problem with the AC.
What was your answer?
Oh, and she wanted a price. Left that piece of information out. I just wrote her back and I said, I would not recommend purchasing a vehicle, you know, that you've been told it needs a head gasket and AC. I mean, I said, you're facing thousands of dollars in repair. I mean, I, without seeing it, I couldn't even give you, you know, an answer, but I know AC systems are thousands of dollars. A head gasket repair is thousands typically.
How many times have people brought their cars in and say, all I need is a squirt of Freon, and we find out the compressor's locked up, we find out there's metal throughout the system, we find the belt's been burnt off the compressor because it's seized up like an engine with no oil.
Yeah.
Happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the head gasket issue, head gaskets to pull the four-cylinder Subaru, to pull the heads off of it, on a 1 to 10 scale is a 5 or a 6. But what happens if they drove it till it quit? And when you take the heads off,
yeah,
the cylinders are wiped out and the heads are, the pistons are melted.
Oh, yeah.
Then all of a sudden we just went from a head gasket replacement from someone who wanted to sell their car.
Mm-hmm.
We went from a head gasket replacement to a complete engine replacement.
Oh, yeah.
And then on Subarus, I'm going to say it because you won't, but that's the biggest piece of junk that was ever made in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, okay? That thing was just a big piece of junk from bumper to bumper. There wasn't anybody that loved that car, and if they did, they were liars, but they had a glove box full of bills on them. Those things were just junk. They're better today in the last 20 years, but when you start talking about 19-anything, we're talking Fred Flintstone time, okay? Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble were the ones that were working on cars back in the 19s. And those cars belonged in that kind of era. So 602-508-0960, Mark and Andy, we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Mark Salem here every Saturday talking about car repair. My daughter, Andy, who runs our operation in Tempe, she's sitting here with me. She's been in the business since how old? Well, how many years?
20 plus.
20 plus years.
Mm-hmm.
What's your employee number?
59.
Okay, where are we at today?
222.
Okay. So, with few exceptions, you and Alan have the most senior number, because Mom and I have 1 and 2 when we.
Yeah,
put the,
Eddie, I think, is number 7,
okay.
And Andy, I think, is 36, and Jeff is 50-something.
Okay,
so.
Okay.
Or, yeah.
And we're talking about 1991. I wrote, I along with Steve Witzel, who's deceased, we wrote our software for our business, and we wrote the software around the business. And then, of course, everybody was assigned employee numbers after that. So Mark and Renee are 1 and 2, and then the kids and stuff are 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, whatever they are. Alrighty, Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange has more experience than anybody else in the valley, because this is why. He's been around since automatics first came out. He worked on the very first ones, the Power Glides from the Chevrolet side, the old Fords, the Chrysler 727s, all that kind of stuff. He did that. He understands the fundamentals. Many of the new young men today that are working on the new electronically controlled cars don't have a clue about the old ones, or many of them don't have a clue about the fundamentals of what crossed over between making it happen mechanically and then now using a computer to make it happen. So Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington, best place I know. Let's go to the phones. Ken, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi. Yes, I've got a 1991 Ranger with the 3-liter 6 and about 108,000 miles on it.
Okay.
And my question is about cooling system, temperatures. It has a aftermarket mechanical temperature gauge in it.
Okay.
How does a shop go about checking whether that gauge is accurate? Because I'm concerned about overheating and frying an engine, just like you were talking about.
Okay. Let me ask you a question real quick first. What kind of temperature range are you seeing on your gauge?
Okay, so when it first starts up, it warms up to about 200 or so, and then it looks like the thermostat opens and it drops back down. Then running in town on the city street, it will stay around 200, 210. Here in our hot temperatures, running on the flat freeway, it will be 220, 230. And then what I'm really concerned about is trying to climb those long hills to Payson.
Okay.
I've been hitting the 250, and, well, I've even gone up where I've pulled it over the shoulder of the road and sat.
I already know what's wrong with your car. But I'm going to answer your question first. We have temperature guns. You can buy them for like $50 from Harbor Freight. And you just know where your aftermarket gauge is plugged into. And you just gun the sender that screws into the intake manifold of your motor. You just gun it. And you take the temperature of it. That's the temperature the gauge should show. Pretty close. I am not concerned about any of your temperatures between 180 and 220. I'm not. But I'll tell you what's wrong with your car. The radiator's plugged up. and the radiator's plugged up because you said when I get out on the long road and I start climbing hills, it gets up 250, 260. The radiator, instead of flowing water 100% through the radiator from one tank to the other, a third of your radiator is plugged up. I'm just guessing. I'm going to draw you a mental picture.
I was going to say, do not go to your shop on Monday and tell them to replace the radiator.
Thank you for that. So I'm drawing a visual because, see, we don't have television. I can't see me waving my hands. A third of your radiator is plugged up. So when you start going 60, 70 miles an hour, that little Ford is really pumping out some horsepower. Well, the water goes into the radiator, but because so much of it's plugged up with trash, that it goes through too fast and it can't dump its heat off. So as a result of that, then it grows in temperature. So you're going to Payson at 250, 260, it needs a radiator, and you ain't going to flush it. Not with something that's a 1991 with 108,000 miles on it. It's not going to flush. So that's an easy diagnosis for us old guys. You said it all. You just saved yourself $100 by telling us what you've told us. And so you can check it. And another thing you can do is whatever the gauge says, just gun the upper radiator hose or the thermostat housing, because the thermostat housing should be doggone close to what your gauge says.
All right, the metal thermostat housing.
Yes.
Gun that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Another thing.
To check my radiator, can I check the top hose and the bottom hose and see how much difference there is?
I'm concerned. I'm not smart enough to know if the rubber is going. I was going to tell you to do the hoses, and then I'm thinking to myself, will the rubber give me a better temperature reading than the aluminum housing on the thermostat? And then I thought, I better tell him the aluminum housing. Or if the radiator has metal tanks in it, you can gun the upper tank. But I'm thinking the best part is the thermostat is open, water's coming from the radiator, from the engine into the radiator, so you gun it right there, and that'll give you the water coming out of the motor. The upper housing, the upper thermostat housing.
Yeah, right where the hose hooks off.
Uh-huh, yes. Not the hose, but the housing itself, okay?
The housing itself, okay. All right, thank you.
All right, good luck to you. Thank you very much. I think we can start with Dale.
Okay.
Dale, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mark and Andy. How are you this morning?
Good, how are you?
Good.
Not bad. So I have a 2015 Nissan Sentra. It was my commuter car, still is sometimes. has about 115,000 miles on it. The air conditioner started working badly. I took it to my shop. They recharged it, checked everything out. As far as they were concerned, everything was fine. Yet, when I'm going down the road, the fan works fine and it blows cold, but when I come up to a stop or an idle, I get no cold air. It just goes, you know, nothing. They said, as far as they know, everything's fine. Is there any fix to that, or do I just need to take it somewhere else that knows a little bit more about air conditioning?
I can answer your question. What's the difference between you going down the road at 45, 50 miles an hour and you sitting at a traffic light?
I don't know. You know, I'm stopped.
Okay.
There's no wind blowing into the engine compartment.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. There's no air crossing over the condenser that sits with the radiator, in front of the radiator. So that's the difference. So if it's full of Freon and you come to a stop, all of a sudden, that means we've got an airflow restriction on the condenser, which is probably huge bugs and butterflies. And your car is a 15 with 115,000 miles, so you've been around the world almost 4 or 5 times. So I'd be cleaning the radiator. I'd be cleaning the grill. I'd make sure I had it, and I'd also, do you have a belt-driven fan on that center or an electric fan?
I believe it's belt.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
If it's a clutch fan, you could be bad, and the clutch fan is supposed to lock up at low RPMs when you come to a stop and suck air across the condenser and the radiator. So you could have a bad fan clutch, but it works doggone good when you're doing 45. So it's not a Freon level issue, and it's not a compressor issue. It's an airflow issue.
Yeah, and I think that you just need to, if you take it back to the shop, you need to specify that going down the road it seems to be fine, and then sitting at a light is when you experience it. Because if you just tell them it blows warm, that's going to send them in a different direction than what you've told us.
She brings up a great idea.
Okay.
Don't tell her what the guy on the radio said. Tell him what I'm identifying the real question.
What you just said is perfect.
Perfect.
Driving down the road, but even then, they'll check the Freon level. It could seem colder as you're driving, it's very different than just blowing warm all the time.
And stay here, Dale. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. All 5 lines are available. 602-508-0960. You got a car question, year, make, and model, mileage, and give us the symptoms. Year, make, and model, mileage, and give us the symptoms. Mark and Andy Salem at your service. Automotive Dynamics is one of Sun City's largest and most trusted shops for complete automotive services. Chuck Nyday, and I've known Chuck since the late 70s. Chuck has owned and operated this facility since 1982. He knows how to handle technicians and staff. He knows how to have them take care of the customers and keep the customers' needs in front of everybody else's needs. Otherwise, he's going to make sure his technicians and his shop people don't sell stuff to butter their own bread. They're going to sell stuff you need. That's it. So Autodynamics, north side of Grand, which west of 99th Avenue, good guy, and the only one, unfortunately, the only one that I can suggest to you if you live in that geographical area. Okay, you had something you wanted to talk about. The radiator?
Oh, the other thing I was going to say is if he goes to the shop, obviously make sure he tells him exactly that. Under load, uphill is when it's getting warm. But the cool tool that we have, that thermal imager, is a good one. If the shop near him has one, you can see.
Describe it for everybody else.
It almost looks like a radar gun. Yeah, a temperature gun, that kind of a thing, and it will just show, you know, do a thermal image. You can kind of do it across anything on the car.
So when you look at the radiator and when you look at the condenser, it'll tell you where the hot spots are and where the cold spots are.
Yeah.
And on a radiator, you can thermal image the radiator, and you can see, you want everything to be even. And if the hot water's coming in on the top, then the top third is a little warmer than the middle third that's a little cooler, and then the bottom third is the coolest. So on the condenser, it's the same way. We're looking for different heat zones that have no explanation. And that's pretty sophisticated. Those machines are in the thousands of dollars. And it's a new technology that we understand and how it helps us diagnose things faster. There's other people out there that have them.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Alan, and I hope I pronounced that right. How can I help you today?
Well, I have an 07 PT Cruiser, and the battery light came on, and it was driven until the battery went dead. And then it was parked for a couple of years. We put a battery in it, and somehow it ended up at a oil change, or what used to be an oil change place. And they, I guess a new people had taken over it, and they put cables on it, battery cables. And it started after it left there. It started a few times after that, and then the fan would stay on after it shut it off. I took the battery cable off, wouldn't start after that. We took it to a mechanic that works on old cars and stuff. And, he said he reset some kind of computer, but he couldn't really fix the electrical problem or something. And so we brought it home, and now it, when I put the battery cable on, the alarm is honking. And so I'm looking for a place to take it and give us a diagnosis, whether it's worth fixing or, you know.
Andy, bid this. What's the electrical systems test going to cost?
Well, I would say probably $45 to $150, depending on if there's a draw or something else going on.
If we have to chase something down.
Yeah, chase something down. What part of town
definitely
are you
a draw.
In? Yeah, what part of...
South Phoenix.
Where is South Phoenix, east or west of Central?
Right on Central and right at the entrance to the park. I live right there on Thunderbird Trail.
Gosh, we don't have anybody down there.
Where's... Dave's is...
Tempe is pretty close. I was thinking that, you know...
Tempe, Larry Harker's.
Harker's is 38th Avenue in Indian School. He's way north.
Okay.
He's way north. I don't have anybody in Central Phoenix. The 25th Street Auto would be 25th Street in Indian School. They could handle this with no problem. What you're looking for is an electrical systems analysis from a gray-haired person who's done this before. And let me just run through that real quick for you. You ready?
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Yes.
Mark said I'm going to pull both cables and charge the battery until it's at 14 volts. Okay?
Right.
No, 13 volts. Yeah. I'm sorry. Wait a minute. I'm ahead of
13
myself.
13 at least,
No, 13.
Yeah.
That's
okay,
one 13. Volt over. And then I'm going to put the cables back on it. But before I put the negative on, I'm going to put an ammeter in there to see if there's any draw before I even touch the negative cable to the negative terminal. No amp drop. I put them together. Then I start, and then I check the battery again, and I still got 13 volts in it, or I got, still got 12, 12, 6, 12, 8, whatever. Then I start it up, and I better see it grow 1 volt. So if it's 12.6, it should go to 13.6. I rev the motor up and all the electrical stuff is off, and I want to see 13.5, somewhere around there. I want it to hold. I want the light to be off. And then I have an inductive amp probe around all the positive or all the negatives. And I go, oh, 15 amps, baby. That's good. Then I'm going to sit there and wait until the cooling fan comes on. And if the cooling fan comes on, I want to see it come on. I look at my temperature gun. I check the temperature gun. It's coming on at 240. It drops it down to 200. It goes off. Boom, we're done. So that's how it all works. But that was what Andy just talked about. Could be $150. But the electrical systems analysis at the very beginning is going to be somewhere, give or take, $50.
Yeah, well, that's what we need. We need to know whether or not, it's, you know, they already spent a bunch of money on it to actually put new cables on. They just put these conventional cables, and those cables go all down around very hot places, and I know they were different than, you know, I mean, the factory cables were not just the
Okay, another thing, too, is when we do cables, we have to take the cable, and the negative cable goes to the frame or to the motor, but we have to have a jumper cable from the motor to the frame. So we have to ground both the motor and the frame on the negative side. On the positive side, we're going to go straight to the starter solenoid, and then from there, we're going to hopscotch to the fuse box and places. So there's three or four parts of the car that need grounds, and three or four parts of the car that need power, and we have to make sure all of that. The other day, a car came in, and I know this is a soft break. A car came in not too long ago, and there was this dangling wire. Well, it was the one that fed the dashboard and the fuse panel. And so it had corroded off. So all we did is and put it back on, and we're done. So 25th Street Auto, tell Billy, Mark Salem, Andy Salem said there's not a prayer in hell he can fix this car, but we sent you there anyway.
25th Street and Indian School.
Yeah, it's called 25th Street Auto. Mm-hmm. Yes, 25th and Indian School. Okie doke?
Okie doke. Thank you much.
You betcha. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Let me write down my break there, 2953. I forgot to do that, but it's okay. I'll make it up later. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My daughter, Andy, who runs our operation in Tempe. Myself, I'm an ASE master, been around a long time. But we're going to take Dave first because he's been waiting. Dave, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
Okay. I have a quick question. I have a 2008 Mustang GT. And I had on the air conditioner, it had defaulted to defrost. So I got in to change the motor in there, which I did. But to do that, I had to put my head right next to the passenger airbag. So I didn't want to do that with the battery disconnected. Disconnected the battery, went in the house, came back a couple hours later, pulled the fuse, and then I pulled the connector to the airbag, did everything I needed to do, put it all back together, connecting the battery last. But I've got it. It's flashing a code 23 at me on the airbag light, and the airbag light stays on. I'm really kind of reluctant to run down to the dealer because I'm afraid they're just going to tell me, oh, it just needs a new airbag and leave it at that. Do you have any ideas on something like that?
Well, I don't think I've ever when you turn the key on, the computer is going to look at all the different airbags, and it's going to shoot a signal through wire number one, and it wants to see a return on wire number two. So it wants to see this closed circuit. So sometime or another, it's not seeing that. What I would do if I were you is I'd take the both battery cables off. Take both battery cables off and touch them together. They're not connected to the battery. We're going to discharge all the capacitors, and we're going to eliminate anything that's in memory. Touch the battery cables together. Easiest thing to do is, you know, have a little jumper wire and just go from the metal part of the negative to the metal part of the positive. Do not touch the battery cables, the terminals together. You understand the difference, right?
Jump the two
cables. And they're off. They're off the battery. The two cables have been removed from the battery, and we're going to touch the two metal portions of the cables to one another.
Got it.
And that discharges everything. The easiest thing to do is go get a little jumper lead.
It's kind of like a hard reset.
Yeah. That's another word for it. And it's a Ford, so we're going to start there anyway. But I'm teasing you, of course. Mm-hmm. But that should take care of it. Touch the two metal portions of the cables together. Walk away from it for 3, 4, 5 minutes. Come back. The positive goes on first. The negative goes on last. Turn the key to the on position. Count to 10. Just to the on position. Count to 10. Start it up and go drive it and see what happens. But this isn't a big deal. If you did what you said you did, you should not have created an airbag problem. But I just think it's programmed to look at, I'm going to look at this, and I saw a no airbag signal, and I'm going to keep looking 9 more times. And at the 9th time, if I see that the airbag signal's on, then I'm going to turn the light off.
And also, is it kind of like the, on the check engine side, is it, so if it comes back on, should he just drive it and it will run the self-test, and at some point it will recognize that it is working there, so, and it will shut it off?
That's a possibility.
Okay.
It's certainly a cheap and inexpensive possibility, especially if he lives 20 miles from work every day.
Yeah.
He can continue to drive it because the airbag light just means the airbags are down. That's all. It doesn't, and it's yellow, that means caution. It doesn't mean stop. It just means you're not going to have any airbags if you have a crash. So there are times, Andy talks, she's exactly right. There are times it will work by you just, and we're looking for key cycles. 10 key cycles, maybe 4 temperature changes. So we go from cold to hot 5 times, and we do it over 10 times of key cycles, and all of a sudden everything's okay. We have scanners that cost us between $25,000 and $50,000. We plug in and we put all these secret codes in there, and we tell it, hey, reboot yourself and stop being stupid.
The other thing too is if you have a shop that you go to that you know, you frequent often, and you just tell them what repair you did and how you did it, they would probably you know, clear it for you if you couldn't get it off.
Let me change your answer. Under certain conditions, we have customers that have patronized us for many years, mm-hmm. and if this was them and they came in, if we just cleared it and cleared the code and cleared the memory and fixed it, we probably wouldn't charge them for the 15 minutes worth of work.
Yeah, and I think it would be you should have them note the code just in case it comes back, so you know if it's a reoccurring thing. But yeah, I think that's also a thing you can do.
One other thing is you talked about the defrost only. 99 times out of 100, that's a vacuum leak underneath the hood that causes that. 99 times
really?
Out of 100, yeah. Because what happens is underneath the hood, we have a vacuum leak, and we use vacuum to open and close that blend door. And as a result of that, then the blend door doesn't move, and then the computer knows it doesn't move because there's a position sensor with it. And so the computer, and then you end up with a problem with the air conditioning where it's stuck on defrost. And more times than not, it's a vacuum. The vacuum hose has fallen off. The connector is broken. The rubber T is broken, whatever. But there's a lot of us old guys, the very first thing we're going to do is lift the hood, get our stethoscope out, and listen for this kind of a noise. When the motor's running, we're just going to wave our stethoscope around. We go, oh, look at over here, the EGR line and the port that feeds it from manifold are broken. Okay, we'll fix that, and it'll fix the defrost. So, okay?
Okay. Hey, I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We're going to be here for another another hour afterwards. What are you pointing at?
I think we've got another call.
Oh, we have another caller. Who might that be?
Andy's correct. Say hello to Larry.
Larry, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mark. Calling from Lavernia, Texas, south of San Antonio.
Oh, don't tell my wife that, because between
Kerrville and... We love us from Texas.
Yes, sir. The girls from Arizona go between Kerrville, Texas, and Austin and Fredericksburg, and they buy all
Kerrville.
That junk you
sure.
Texas guys sell, and they bring it back to Arizona Kerrville. And sell it and make money.
Sure. That's great. Hey, I just... I've got a 2005 Sequoia 4x4 V8 engine that I bought new in 2005. It's got 190,000 miles.
Okay.
I've done maintenance over the years. It runs great, but I have never changed the spark plug.
Wow.
And I'm just asking you, what am I risking here, if anything?
You know, if you do it, okay. I would want it cold for sure. I would want the appropriate ratchet and the appropriate extension and the appropriate socket, and I would want a socket with a rubber insert to protect, try not to break the insulation, the business end of the spark plug. I would do it cold, and I would go a little tight, a little loose, a little tight, a little loose, and I just work it back and forth. Now, are the spark plugs at a horizontal angle or a vertical angle on your Sequoia?
They are horizontal.
Okay. So I'd spray a little bit. Once I start bringing it out, then I'd spray some WD-40 back there on the threads, and then I'd take it back in, and then I'd take it back out, and I just work them. Whatever you do, if you get one stuck, go get some help, because all of us have done that. Now, here's the deal. The last thread sticks through the head, and we get a carbon ring around the end of the spark plug, and people will muscle out the spark plug, which will bring the threads with it, and now you got a big deal in front of you.
Got it.
What we do, like other places do, is we end up injecting some oil into that cylinder, and we'll let it sit for a day or two and soften up that ring of carbon that's on the very end of the spark plug.
Good point.
Yeah, that's okay. We do that often. I mean, for situations like
this.
Yeah,
but we need to just also, we have to be honest, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What the hell are you doing 190 at no spark plugs?
Yeah.
I know. You know,
well,
I've
that's
done
a Toyota.
I've done the I've done the belt and I've done everything, you know. I've changed all the fluids. I just, for some reason, didn't want to touch those plugs.
Okay. I don't think, I think that there's about a 25% chance you're going to be in deep poo-poo, and there's a 75% chance that you'll have no problems at all. I don't care about what brand you buy. You can buy any brand you want. Just buy a name brand. There's only four places in the world that make spark plugs. So your spark plug's going to have 10 different labels in it and 10 different boxes. Who gives it anything? And at the end of the day, just make sure they're gapped appropriately. I would use a little I'd get a tube of dielectric grease. And when you put the spark plug back in, then you take the boot and you put about half as much of a line of dielectric in the boot as you do your toothbrush. So basically 3/8 of an inch.
Yep.
Stick it in there, then put your boot on and twist it back and forth, get that, smooth that out. Now you've waterproofed that seal and you've guaranteed that, and you haven't pulled the wires off this yet. Those spark plug boots could be baked to those spark plugs.
Yeah.
And that's you're going to have to dig every one of those out.
Just do it on a day that you have some time. And you have some patience. Yes.
And don't say anything. You're going to save yourself money in front of your wife because those words can bite back.
Oh, yeah. After the fact. After it's running and you've taken the maiden voyage, then you can talk.
Yeah. Let me ask you another question. About a year ago, you know, I'm really hesitating here. About a year ago, a mechanical shop, which I don't really know, they suggested changing them, and they were going to charge me, like, without the boot, $250. And I wonder if that's within the realm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you what, if you told, did you tell them it was $190 on the clock?
Yeah.
Okay. I would have bid it higher than that.
Yeah, that sounds really low, actually.
Yeah, Frank. And I want to tell you something. There's nobody that has a better handle on the dollars, labor rates, and stuff like that of shops than I do. Because I am constantly doing that all over Phoenix and Arizona. Texas, I admit I'm not good at that in Texas. But in reality, it's really important. You got to bid over. This is, Andy knows this because I preach this to her and her brother. You always bid it high and you come in low and you're a hero. So that might have been, you know what? It could be 400. You know what I mean? It could be 400. Yeah. I'm just going to tell you 400. I won't be a penny over, but it could be. Now, it could be that I had to pull the head off and I'm going to stop then and tell you, and the 400's off the table. Right. Then you come in and we go, you know what? We got everything done for 250. You're going to love us for the rest of your life. And
okay.
So
that sounds great.
Yeah,
great show. I listen to you all the time. I used to live in Arizona. That's how I found you.
Okay. Oh, neat.
We have friends that own a motorcycle shop in Kerrville, and my wife and his wife are really good friends, and they have a motorhome, and we have a motorhome, and they're talking about going together and stuff like that. And I'll tell you a real quick story, okay? So Bob calls me, and he's one of these guys that knows everything in the world about everything in the world about everything in the world.
Like Mark.
Like me.
Like Mark.
So two of those people. Oh.
So he calls me and he says, my inner dual on my RV is flat and I've got quite a ways to go before I can get to the next service center. He says, what should I do? And I said, how do you know it's flat? And he goes, well, my tire pressure monitoring system says the tire's flat. And I said, okay, well, what's the temperature of the tire? What do you mean, what's the temperature of the tire? If you have a TPMS, almost all of them have temperature. Is there a temperature button there? And I can hear his wife yelling in the background, there's a temperature button there. So she pushes the temperature button and the temperature button's 170. And I said, okay, so have you been traveling with one flat inner dual on this big coach of yours? Yes, I have. Okay, well, you're only at 170. The glue comes apart at 200. So try to stay away from 200 to 220 because you're going to ruin the tire. Just go slow. Watch the temperature. So he calls me back and he goes, we're here. And he says, and actually, I was going really slow. I had my flashers on. He says, and the temperature dropped from like 170 to 160 and then ended up 150, even though it was flat. And I said, well, what about the outer one that was carrying the work of two? And he goes, well, I was watching that too. And he goes, and it stayed at about 170. And I said, good, we're done. And so then his wife called back later and she said, he won't admit it. He'll tell everybody he found that out himself and he won't give you the credit. So I said, it's okay with me. I don't care. But anyway, that's the life in the name of Mark. But Bob and Sarah in Texas are good friends of ours. We have lots of friends in Texas. My wife has got many junk dealers that know her by name.
Yes.
And they actually have a copy of her credit card on file. But anyway, thank you for your kind words. Alrighty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. No matter where you're at, you can call us and you can get in. We have five lines available. Andy and I are going to be here, or I'm going to be here for another hour, and Andy's going to go with my wife and go shopping and spend a lot of money. And I don't know what else to do. Thanks for spending your Saturday with me. Alrighty, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, I lost my daughter. She and my wife decided to go junking. And so it's just me for the next hour, and you're welcome to join us. We have two of the five lines that are already taken, but we have three that are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and the 0960 is obviously 960 The Patriot here in Phoenix. And that's the reason why we have that phone number. I mean, you're welcome to call us and basically give us your name and tell us what kind of car you have and the mileage and tell us what the problem or the symptom or the question is, and that's easy. If you heard any portion of the first hour, I'm really proud of my daughter. She runs an operation, and it's one that, you know, my wife and I created back in 79. And it's called, and we rarely say the name of our shop on the air because this show is not about our shop. It's about your car. But we have a shop in Tempe called Salem Boys, and the ironic part of it, it's run by a Salem girl. and she can talk turkey with the greasiest fingered guys that come to the front counter, and she's really blessed with just an ability to absorb data and circumstances and stuff like that. And so when you start talking about 190,000 mile spark plugs and bringing them out and talking about the ring of carbon on the last thread of the spark plug, she's shaking her head. She's already been there. She's done that. She knows what the activity is like. She knows what the success rate is. She's bid that kind of stuff. And she was whispering in my ear, you know, bid it high, because we do that. We bid it high and come in low, and we do that on purpose. On high, we don't have to call you and up your estimate. But if we bid it at 500 and we come in at 410, then yeah, I think you'd like that a lot better. Nevertheless, for the radio show, we have two lines open, or three lines open, 602-508-0960. Let me tell you real quick, in the Phoenix metropolitan area, there is a motorhome group called Sport Truck RV. And you can go to sporttruckrv.com. It's in South Chandler. And they're looking for some lady to take over a variety of jobs at their facility. She's going to work the front desk. She's going to welcome visitors. She's going to find out who to send them to, whether it's parts or service or sales or whatever. She's going to perform basic bookkeeping, filing, receive processes and invoices, and then process people that want to drop their coach off for service. She's kind of a one-man band. This is a kind, they're looking, they know they're out there. A lady who is just well-versed in all kinds of that type of service. And they're looking for someone with initiative to adopt this as something I've done before and I can do now. So if you're interested, it's a Monday through Friday kind of job, but they need somebody to help them out. And it's from the reception area to the showroom, office supplies, drop-offs, bookkeeping and filing, clerical duties. But there's a lot of customer interaction. So if you're interested, get a hold of just go to sporttruckrv.com and fill out an application there, or set up an appointment to stop and talk to Daryl, and he's the one that's the big dog there. And I bring you this because I respect him, and he's had a tough time filling a position of one of his people that had been there many years, I guess had gone and moved out of town. So he's hurting, and I told him, you know, I'll take a few minutes and talk about something that you need. So let's go to Don. Don, good morning to you. Thank you for holding. How can I help you?
You're welcome, Mark. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, I just wanted to thank you and to give a heads up for Thompson's Automotive. Joey had an unexpected opening, so they're doing the work, doing the engine change on my Sonoma right now, my 01 Sonoma, and I just can't thank you enough and appreciate the personnel over at Thompson's Automotive. I was kind of afraid of becoming a pain in the neck, you know, but they're always really, Joey and Ken is the guy working on my engine change, are willing to discuss every little last detail, you know. I'm an aircraft A&P mechanic myself, and anyway, I'm really impressed with the entire crew over there, and the facility itself is just amazing, you know. It's just so professional and courteous. But anyway, I thought I'd give you an opportunity to brainstorm this one idea I had. You were talking about the thermal energy imaging heat gun sensor or something for determining the different temperature of the radiator.
We have cameras for the thermal imaging, but then we have temperature guns where we can do non-contact temperature reading. So we use both of those instruments.
Okay. I do my own, I've done three of my own head gasket jobs, because once you lose the coolant, there's no more fluid to send a temperature to the gauge on the instrument panel.
Right.
And by the time it starts pinging, it's too late.
Yes.
So then you got to do the head. Is there a way to hardwire one of those thermal imagers into an instrument on the panel that you can measure the actual temperature of the cylinder head itself instead of just the water or the air, actually, after you lose your water? It's just air, and the temperature gauge reads normal until it starts pinging. So is there a monitor that you can wire into the instrument panel that'll give you like a cylinder head temperature on an airplane or something?
Okay. Well, yes, I'm sure you could do that. I'm sure that that's something that I could do, but let me just give you the odds here, okay? We process 20 to 30 cars a day. We have 20 bays in our facility. Uh-huh. We only run across this one time a year. And in reality, the one time a year is if it's the lady driver, she'll tell us the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help her God. If it's the guy, he's got an excuse why he ignored the red lights, the steam, the knocking noise, the pinging noise, the steam coming out from underneath the hood, but the woman won't. And so I want to caution you about going too crazy towards this idea when there's so many symptoms associated with this, especially pre-ignition on acceleration. If every time you throttle up, it starts knocking, you're in dire straits. Shut the thing off and coast to the side of the road. But if I were going to do that, what I would do is I would probably want to interface where the temperature sender is getting its information, which is typically the aluminum intake manifold, and I would probably take my heat sensor from there. And now you still have to interpret that number, so you have to know what really hot is and what really cold is, and then you have to turn that into a digital number that you can read. But with your A&P, you already know that cold is going to give you one ohm reading and hot's going to give you the other ohm reading. And if you ground the thing, then you get the highest ohm reading. So you can measure and figure that out for yourself.
That's a thermocouple.
Yes.
Okay, well, it's not critical at this moment, but when it happens on the highway, you know, you're under constant throttle, steady throttle, and you don't realize it until it starts pinging. Then you pull over immediately, you know.
I'm going to argue with you on that, because 99 times out of 100 people that come in, it started losing power, and I just kept giving it more gas, and it was rattling, it was pinging, it was making noise, and then all of a sudden I needed a tow truck. So they tell us different stories, but I also understand that you're working on airplanes, and really and truly there's a small amount of grace with an airplane, where in a car, you can drive it till the motor blows up and just scatters all over the road, pull off to the side of the road and get out and you're fine. With an airplane,
You're already on the ground.
You're already on the ground. That's the better answer. You're already on the ground. Okay. Thank you very much, Don. Thank you for making me laugh. You bet. Mike, you're up next. Mike, how can I help you?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, I'm working on a 2010 Chrysler Town & Country, 139,000 miles. All my lights and wipers just start going crazy all of a sudden. Replace the battery and just can't find anything.
So when you turn the key on, you can't control the wipers?
I know when you're driving, just all of a sudden all the lights come on, wipers go on. Don't lose power. Sometimes it happens, you lose power.
Okay, here's fundamentally where you start, okay? We need the negative post of the battery to be connected to at least two and maybe three places. So normally the negative cable goes to the engine,
Then there's another ground that goes from the engine to the frame, and there's another ground at the back of the motor that goes to the firewall. There's three negative grounds because the motor sits in rubber motor mount. So that's the first place we're going to ground to the battery. Then from there, we're going to go from the motor to the frame to close that connection. And then from the back of the motor to the firewall. I'm quite sure it's called a volt drop test. I'm quite sure that most of us gray haired guys are going to be able to find out where we're missing the ground. And then you're not going to try to find the ground. You're just going to make a new one and put it in. Just be done with it. That's what I do.
Okay, yeah. Clean some of the ground. I didn't know there's three of them.
Yeah. Well, think about it. Your body sits on rubber mounts, okay? And the only place that the dashboard gets attached to the ground is through the transmission shift linkage that's mounted on the tunnel of the body, but the transmission shift linkage goes down to the transmission that's also mounted in rubber. So the three things I want, it's battery to engine, engine to frame, and sometimes it's the same bolt. It'll be the same bolt that bolts into the motor that has two cables on it. One goes to the battery and one goes to the frame. And then if you have a voltmeter, it's called a volt drop test, okay? So you keep the positive on the positive side of the battery. And then you just go from the positive, you go to the engine, and it says 12.8. You go to the frame, it says 12.7.5. Then you go to the firewall or to the engine or to the cabin of the car, and it goes to 9.6. There's your problem. Okay, Doke?
All right. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. That's something that we probably do once a month out of the 300 or 400 cars that we do a month. We probably do that once a month. It's something quick, easy. Once you've done it or once you've seen it done, it's pretty easy to do. It's being able to understand why you're doing it and then how to fix it. But many times we don't spend the time trying to find a ground wire that's come loose that could be underneath the car. We're just going to add a new one to it, and that's going to be it. Okay, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have five lines. Gil's the one that answers them. He flies the plane. I'm in the first-class cabin, and so I have the best part of the show. But Gil will answer your call at 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem, and this is the KKNT Patriot in Phoenix. Well, 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, the lines are wide open. You're welcome to join us if you have a car question or maybe an argument in the family that needs somebody to chime in on. Or perhaps maybe you've been told something and you want to run it by me and see if it's a valid concern or see if it's if what you've been told. And that will depend on a lot of the information because I'll have lots of questions about, well, what kind of symptoms do you have and what did they say about this? But I'm pretty good at helping you understand their answer. And at times I stick up for their answer. And then at times I'm going to give you more questions to ask that are more pointed, more specific, that will help you decide what to do. When you start talking about car repair shops in the Valley, I have the list of the very best ones. You can find it at marksalem.com. Blackwell Automotive is at 40th Street and Greenway. He's in the northeast quadrant, so to speak. I can't find anybody up there to give him some competition because I'm really particular about the quality and the service and how long you've been in business and what kind of insurances you have and what your Google reviews and your Yelp reviews look like. All that kind of stuff goes into it. But Tom's really good at family cars, motor homes, and hot rods. He does all of that. He has a division that does family cars and all the work that needs to be done. Then he has a vintage car division where he's fixing up cars where people might be spending $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 to have a huge giant engine put in this little bitty car, stuff like that. So that re-engineering of the car, replacing the 4-speed with a 6-speed electrical automatic, those are the kinds of stuff he does on the vintage side. But his skill level is on display. So when you get there, you walk through the shop and you can see that he knows what he's doing. That's Blackwell at 40th Street and Greenway. The other guy on the other side of the town, Larry Harker's Auto Repair, has been around since 1967. I can't tell you how many times I've sent a customer to him with a problem that nobody could find or fix, and they found it and fixed it. Each and every time,
They played the game. It's not a game. They did exactly what they should have done. They identified the problem. They bid the repair. They fixed the car, and they came in underneath their estimate. That's all there is to it. So if you're in your 38th Avenue and Indian School and you're looking for a good place that's been around a very long time, Larry Harker's Auto Repair is my shop for you. When you walk in the door, Ellen, the wife, will take care of you. And you don't want to try to out-talk her, guys, with when it comes to automotive stuff, because she's been around the block kind of like my daughter, Andy. They know a lot about cars. And then you got Bob, and they have a nephew in the shop. And between Bob and the nephew, those guys can fix anything. So that's Larry Harker's Auto Repair. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. I got a couple of shows ago, we were talking about a guy that wanted to put a crankshaft in his car. And I didn't like the reason that he was going to do that. And I told him there was some very specific ways for us to test the crankshaft to see if it was installed right and if it was performing as it should. First of all, we're looking for metal shedding. We're looking for engine knocks. And if it's an engine knock, is it a main bearing or a rod bearing or a wrist pin? Or are we pounding, is the valve half open and we're pounding the valve back into the head? So just because it's got a knocking noise doesn't mean that it's that the crankshaft needs to be replaced. In the process of talking about that, I was talking about clearance, and there was a word that I couldn't remember. And the word was plastic gauge, and let me explain. We have this small piece of plastic piping, and it's very small, and we put it in a particular joint in the car, and then we tighten the joint up appropriately. Then we take the joint apart, and that piece of little pipe has been squished. It's now wider and a little longer. We then take this piece of paper that has a gauge on it, and we put it alongside to where we measure the width, and we identify on the piece of paper that width is 3/1000ths of an inch. And it just so happens that we want 3/1000ths of an inch of clearance on that joint. So you have done a good job as a machinist and as an auto repair engine builder. You've done a good job by matching the bearings with the crankshaft. So this plastic gauge is just exactly that. It's this plastic piece that we use as a gauge. And then it embeds itself into the crankshaft, and you just take a razor blade and you just scrape the plastic off of it again. But if you go in and it's really wide and flat, then you look and go, oh boy, that's really narrow. That's only 1/1000ths of an inch of clearance, and it took that little piece of plastic and just squished it flatter than flat in a really big way. I need a little bit more clearance because 1/1000ths is not what I want. Likewise, at 10/1000ths of an inch, and a human hair is between 3 and 5 thousandths, by the way, at 10/1000ths of an inch, which is two human hairs stacked on top of one another, at that particular point, then it hardly touches this little piece of plastic piping looking stuff. And so then you go, okay, well, then I need to put different bearings in this until I get the gap right. So that's what it was about. The word that escaped me was called plastic gauge. And thank you, Don L., for reminding me that, because it was a show that we did on August 6th, and I just couldn't find that in my repertoire of things in my head that day. And he said it's called plastic gauge for clearance and tolerance, Don L. And Don L. is exactly right. That's exactly what it's all about. When it comes to having your car repaired properly by someone else, what's really important is the communication, and you are directly responsible for the level of communication between you and the shop. What I like and what many, many people like is for you to bring in a written piece of paper that has the symptoms, the information, how to make it happen, who to call. This is my wife's car. You need to call her. She can answer all the questions. No sense in calling me. I just dropped it off. I'm the husband. That kind of stuff. That just pays tremendous dividends in minimizing our diagnostics times and charges and all that kind of stuff if we can just talk to the person that's experiencing the problem. Likewise, lady, husband says, take the car in and tell him this. Then just say, here's my husband's name, here's his cell phone number, call him and when you want to talk to him. And just turn it back to him, because we'd want to talk to him anyway. So those are the kinds of things that you've got. that will help you out when you do. And we like the note that's taped to the rearview mirror that reminds us what my daughter or my son said when they took the car in, because we all need to be on the same page. So if the work order says do an oil change, but the note on the window doesn't, or on the rearview mirror doesn't, it's easy. We just call and say, did you forget to put an oil change on the note that you taped to the rearview mirror? The answer is yeah. Okay, I'll get the oil change done. It's really easy. So written communication is really nice, especially if it's from the driver who's experienced and the pulsation when I apply the brakes, or when I throttle up hard, the air conditioning stops blowing cold out of the center vents, or when I stomp it to the ground, it downshifts to what, like first gear, and the revs go crazy and the engine screams and all that kind of stuff. Those are the kinds of things that's going to cost you less money to diagnose it when we hear those kinds of things. And that's why that communication is really important. I know, ladies, that oftentimes the husbands toss the keys to you in a gentle and loving way and say, you know, get an oil change done on my car. If that's all you've got, that's okay. Because all of us in the industry know that an oil change, we change the oil and the filter, we lubricate the chassis, but in addition to that, there is an inspection that goes on. We check all your fluids to make sure that they're the right color and they're up to par. We check your tires, and there's a sticker on the door that tells us how much inflation your tires should have on it. We check all your fluids, your oil, your transmission, your coolant, your brake fluid, your differential fluid, your transfer case fluid, your battery water. That's all our job. We're supposed to do a complete inspection of your car. But an oil change, to all of the rest of us, means more than just an oil change. There's a whole lot of work. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. If you'd like to join us, have a car question, now's the time. 602-508-0960. We have five lines open, and we have one that's taken. I'm going to get to Robert in just about a minute. But I want to tell you about Kurt's Auto Repair. He's at I-17 and Bell Road in Phoenix on the northeast corner. He's been involved in gas and diesel, and I tease him a lot, but he's capable of fixing your weed eater and your lawnmower too. He's just a well-rounded shop. He has technicians that just simply have a good grasp on internal combustion engines and diesel engines and hydraulics and all that kind of stuff. I can't tell you how many times I've sent someone to Kurt's. A lady who was told she needed an engine, and Kurtz fixed it for, I think, $125. It needed an oil pressure switch. He had to obviously check the oil pressure first and then identify the switch as being bad. But he did I jokingly say, you did a $4,000 engine overhaul for $125 or something like that. Kurtz is a good guy. He knows what he's talking. So if you're in the vicinity of I-17 and Bell and you don't have a repair shop that you want to patronize, may I suggest you try Kurtz, northeast corner of I-17 and Bell. Robert, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Yes. Hello, Mark.
Hello.
I bought a Kia Soul, a 2016 Kia Soul about 3-4 years ago, and at 30,000 miles on it. It now has 40. For most of that time, the miles per gallon indicator was at 23, 24 miles. And all of a sudden, in the last month or so, it's dropped down to 18. Are those, that measurement system, is that accurate?
Well, I'm not really worried. The mileage at 30,000 miles right now, even though it's got 40 now, at 30 to 40,000 miles, I'm not worried about an oxygen sensor. I'm not worried about a computer. I'm not worried about anything. But are you in Phoenix? Is that your home base?
South Scottsdale.
Okay. I think you'll agree with, well, and I want to tell you something. My wife and I had the same conversation because we have this constant argument about fuel economy and average fuel economy. She drives this. It's an F car. I'm only going to tell you it's an F car because my family's never owned an F car before she bought her F car. But she's sitting there at 17, 18 miles to the gallon. And my one-ton Dodge monster truck is sitting there at 17 and 18 miles to the gallon. And so we are always trying to catch one another by resetting their message center or whatever. But both of us have recently fell by about 3 miles to the gallon, and I attributed that to not to our driving habits, but we've had an abundance of moisture. An abundance of moisture. The monsoon between Payson and Phoenix, and we are in both places on a regular basis, there's been a heck of a lot of water. And that means the air has a whole bunch of water in it. It has lots of moisture. The temperature is down where the engine would really have a 100-degree day than a 69-degree morning. So I'm going to write it off. And let me ask you, do you ever smell rotten eggs? Do you ever smell rotten eggs?
No.
Okay. That would be that the engine is running fuel out the tailpipe. That would be that the catalytic converter is having a tough time getting rid of the emissions. That would be something that would be underneath the hood. Plus, if you had an engine code, if you had a problem code, if the computer turned on the check engine light and it was a rich condition, something that would cause it to run rich, to a lot of fuel that it doesn't really need, then 1 and 1 equals 2. But no check engine light. All you've got is a drop in fuel economy. The monsoon is from June to the end of August, and I'm looking forward to
2 minutes.
I had an inch and an eighth rain yesterday afternoon in a period of 10 minutes in Payson. So I think it has more to do with the weather than anything else. Without a check engine light and without you smelling rotten eggs, I say no harm, no foul. Just let's wait till September.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Robert. And I want to tell you, now that Andy's gone, is my daughter. She did the first hour with us. She got in late last night, and so I get up at 5 to feed the horses, and she's already out there feeding the horses, and she has her daughter Josie with her. And so then we come back in the house, and I walk into the radio studio to get ready for radio that starts at 10 o'clock, and this is about, I don't know, 5:36, and my computer has been taken apart. My computer's been pulled out of the rack, and it's completely disassembled, and there's wires and air, and I'm going, holy mackerel. So I go get Andy, and I go, what are you doing? She says, I'm replacing both your hard drives, because I have a C drive and a D drive. I said, I got radio at 10 o'clock, honey. She says, don't worry, I'll be done by then. Well, what are you doing? Well, let me show you. She walks inside. She has this device, and the old hard drive, which looks like a huge piece of a loaf of bread, piece of bread that's in a loaf, it's plugged into one side. Then there's this little bitty box plugged into the other side. And she says, I'm just putting some new digital hard drives in your radio studio computer. And she says, I'm taking these big ones out that are really slow, and I'm putting these little ones out that are really fast. Plus, I'm adding some RAM to your machine, and you'll like it. I said, but I got to have it by 10. She says, it'll be done by 10. So at 9 o'clock, she calls me, and I was out in the barn, and she says, hey, come in and check your computer. Everything's fine. I said, how did you connect all the cables to the back of that PC? And she said, I took a picture before I disconnected everything. And I'm thinking to myself, I am really proud of you, my youngest daughter. I'm proud of all my kids, but I am especially proud of my daughter, Andy. So I wrote the software we use today. Steve Witzel and I wrote in 1979 in DOS. And then we had it updated to Windows, and then we had it updated to something else and something else, and then to SQL Server. So we did a bunch of work to it, but the software that our repair shop uses today, that's proprietary and only in our repair shop, is software that we wrote about our business practices back in 1979. So Andy's a part of that, and I'm especially proud. But I got to tell you, there's no other way to say it. I was really puckered up hoping she'd have this thing done by 10 o'clock. And she did. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's 5 of them. You've got a good chance of getting on, and we're going to be done in 20 minutes. So we still got plenty of time, and I'll be right back. And welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. And I'm Mark Salem. Every Saturday we're here at 10 o'clock. Arizona time till noon, talking about car and car repair questions. You can also email me any questions you have, Mark with a K at marksalem.com. Mark Salem, Salem spelled like the cigarette, S-A-L-E-M. And if you'll put a phone number down there, a lot of times I'm going to call you, and I'll tell you why, is I just hate to type. And so, yeah, I'll do a *67 and that hides my phone number from you. But, and then if you don't answer, I'll say, hey, this is Mark Salem. I'll try you back in 20 minutes. And hopefully you'll check your messages and see the block caller had a name of Mark Salem and you'll answer the phone the next time. So, but I also answer all my emails and Mark with a K, mark@marksalem.com. Tom, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I have a 1998 Civic, and the exhaust has smelled like rotten eggs for a number of years with no check engine light, and the fuel mileage is down as well.
Okay. Does the car ever get abused and run hard? Do you ever go to Flagstaff with all your golfing buddies, and you take all their golf clubs, and you got four big guys inside the Civic?
No, it's mainly been just run-around town car.
Short drips, short trips?
Yes.
Okay. I'm thinking that yes, your short trips, you're never really going to get the exhaust up hot. You're not going to get the catalytic converter lit good. That happens a lot, especially we're right across the freeway from Ahwatukee and Mountain Park Ranch, and we have lots of elderly people there, older people there. And we have ladies that do 2,000 miles a year. When they bring their car in for an oil change, which is once a year, I just have one of my technicians that I can trust to take it out on the freeway and kind of blow it out a little bit. So let's just get the RPMs up. Let's get the engine temperature up to snuff. I want it between half and three quarters, and zip on down the freeway and turn around and come back. Try not to break any laws with the customer's car, and we'd be done.
Well, I do run it on the freeway in town.
I know, but if you're just going from Thomas to Indian School or Thomas to Bell, that's really not enough. I need a complete heat cycle. But really and truly, I'm not worried about what your dilemma is. You got no check engine light. You're smelling some rotten eggs. No check engine light means the computer hasn't seen anything, and I trust the computer. Number two, you smell rotten eggs, which means you are running a little rich, but you're admitting to not a whole lot of miles. And so those two things kind of go together. Other than the fact that you could do this, when you drive it, pull it out of overdrive and pull it into second or third and bring the RPMs up and hold that speed at appropriate times. So if pretend it's a stick, then instead of driving around in fourth gear, I want you to drive around third gear or second gear. That's basically what I'm saying to you, whether you got an automatic or standard. Let's bring the RPMs up. Let's get the motor exercising a little bit more. Let's get some higher RPMs into this driving situation, and you should be fine. Okay. But there's nothing I can do to fix it, but I don't think you have anything broken.
So you think a trip to Flagstaff would help?
Oh, put in two or three of your buddies and some golf clubs in the back of that baby and put it to the floor when you start climbing the hills, and I guarantee you that'll be a new car when you come back
really?
Down the mountain.
I don't have any golf clubs. I don't have any golf clubs.
Well, I'm not going to talk about your fat girlfriends.
No. I used to have hockey sticks, but no more.
Okay.
I haven't played hockey in a while.
Okay.
So, okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay.
I have a special friendship with hockey players. A couple of the guys that I have been friends with for 100 years are actually retired Secret Service guys that have worked the White House in Washington, D.C. area. And they used to come to Arizona because we had a driving school here that they liked to participate and test themselves in the school. And my company started by providing them rental cars, and then after that we just became friends. But I want to tell you something. If you meet some guy that's a hockey player and he's played hockey for a long period of time, that's exactly the kind of guy you want to marry your daughter. That's exactly the kind of guy you want to be on your side at a bar fight. And that's exactly the kind of guy that you want to move next door to. I don't know why that is, but hockey players just have a really soft place in my heart. Neil, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Yes, I have a question about the answer you gave to the gentleman with 190,000 miles on his Sequoia.
Uh-huh.
You were saying that the spark plug can develop a carbon ring at the end of the threads and to put oil in the cylinder to soften it up. Is that correct?
Yes.
How do you get the oil into the cylinder if the plug's still in? That's my question.
Okay. And, I didn't do a very good job about explaining that, but I can explain. When you screw the spark plug in the hole, there's going to be the last thread's going to kind of stick into the combustion chamber. And it's there after 200,000 miles that we have this ring of very hot carbon that's just baked hard and it's like glass. So what we're going to do first is we're going to back the spark plug out until we hit hit resistance. Then we're going to go in, then we're going to go out, then we're going to go in and go out, and we're going to go in and out to kind of clean up the area that we can, and then we're going to put oil in the spark plug hole with the spark plug halfway in between in and out. Let's pretend it's one full turn. I can go one full turn out and then one full turn in. Well, then I'm going to go a half turn out, and I'm going to put 5-10 drops of any kind of oil, engine oil, we use engine oil, in each one of the spark plug holes, and it's going to wick through the threads and soften up that ring of carbon on the end of the spark plug. Now, if we have to, we can obviously inject, usually there's going to be some vacuum ports that feed those different cylinders, and if we needed to, we could inject some mist of oil in there as well, but most of the time, we have a little bit of slop on the spark plug where we can open it enough to dribble some oil down the threads onto the area that we have. But I also want to tell you, this is something that only happens once a year. We don't have too many people drive 190,000 miles with the same set of spark plugs. There isn't too many spark plugs that will go that long without having check engine lights and engine misses. So that was kind of an unusual situation. But does that help explain it?
Yes, I got you. I understand that now. I have another question. If the spark plug is stripped, you're trying to remove it and just, you know, goes around and round and round and won't come out, what's the remedy to fix that?
Well, here's what I would have that conversation with you. You're my customer. Neil, the correct way to take that, fix this, is to go ahead and do the work with the head there. We have the tools. We're going to have to yank the spark plug out, and it's going to bring some threads with it. We're going to retap the hole. Then we're going to put a new set of threads in there, and we're going to do it from the top. And then we're going to put a vacuum cleaner on that spark plug hole for about 2 hours, and we're going to tap the motor over and kind of disturb all the metal that's inside the cylinder. And then we're probably going to go ahead and bring the piston all the way up. We're going to fill it with oil. Till we fill the cylinder with oil. And then we're going to take a straw vacuum and we're going to let it sit all night long. And then we're going to suck all that oil and metal out of the cylinder and do our best. Now, if we screw it up and it doesn't work, we still have to pull the head off. So what we're trying to do is avoid pulling the head off. But the end result could very well be pull the head off. So that's my options. Option A is going to be between X and X dollars, and option B is going to be another $500 more. And so,
okay, thank you very much for the information.
All righty. We have kits and we have tools available that allow us to replace the threads on a lot of cars without removing the head. But most gray-haired guys like me are going to say, the proper way is to pull the head. This is a shortcut. It's not going to cost you any more than the right way to pull the head and do it. But let me try the shortcut, and if I win, then your bill's going to be a third less. And most people will say, I'll take the gamble. And I think probably 1 out of 10 that we've done, we had to pull the head on. So, and it's just the way it is. But anyway, those were great questions. Thank you very much, Neil. When it comes to... Oh, we have another caller. Who might that be?
Say good morning to Pat.
Pat, good morning.
Good morning. I listen to you guys all the time. Really appreciate what you do. I am going to ask also for some. I've have been since the time that I got my car with a dealership on service, and quite honestly, I think they're taking advantage of me. I'm a single widow.
Okay.
So I'm looking to have someone that's not affiliated with that kind of practice. So. I live in Peoria, Arizona, but I'm right on the edge of Sun City. So I'm sure there must be good people in that area since there's a lot of people in Sun City. Do you have any recommendations?
Auto Dynamics would be my recommendation. Auto Dynamics, let me look here real quick. It's on north side of Grand, 99th and Grand. 99th okay. Avenue and Grand. Auto Dynamics, and you're welcome to say that Mark Salem referred me to your shop. There's a little bit of pressure associated with that statement. And Chuck is the owner of the shop, and I've known Chuck since 1979. And Chuck and I got into trouble together in the 70s and in the 80s and in the 90s. And I became a policeman in there somewhere along the line. But Chuck knows the difference between right and wrong. He's been in business a very long time. I know him personally, and I have no problem with sending you there. You just look him in the eye and you say, just here's what I want you to do. And if you find something, I want you to put it in writing and explain everything on the repair order and then give me an estimate, worst case scenario. I want our relationship to be reduced to writing, and to be perfectly honest with you, many of us love to hear that because that's what we want to do too.
Okay, that's great. Thank you so much. I listen all the time to your show, so I'm glad I got it. Well, so thank you so much.
You're welcome, ma'am. Good luck to you. And Auto Dynamics was the one. I don't take the responsibility lightly of guiding people to shops around. This all got started in 1988. I was on another radio station, and the number one question is, where's your shop? Well, obviously my shop grew by leaps and bounds. The problem is it was uncontrollable growth. My wife and I had no skill level in being able to handle this growth, and frankly, we didn't do a really great job. So one day, Jim Tazrak, who has since passed, but he was the general manager of the station, said, hey, kid, he says, why don't you have some friends in the business? And I said, yes, sir, I do. And he goes, why don't you talk about them? He says, do you have friends north, south, east, west, central, north, central, south, central, east, central, west? I said, yes. He goes, well, talk about them. That's how it became the best car repair shops list by Mark Salem. That's it. They pay hardly nothing to be on the list, but you're not allowed to buy your way on the list because I'm the one that does the inspections. I'm the one that does the background. I'm the one that meets you. You have my cell and I have your cell.
2 minutes.
And you also agree that at the end of the day, if there's a dispute, you agree to my resolution. Do you know how many times in the last 20 years that it's gone, the complaint has gone to a resolution? Zero. Zero. A lot of times the customers... not a lot of times. Sometimes the customer is just simply not aware of the technical words we're using, and the shop did what was right, and sometimes the shop didn't do what was right, and the shop will fix it. It's that easy. So when you get down to it, I'm really proud of the best car repair shops list, but I'm especially proud of my relationship with the owners of every single one of them. And we all get along fine, and we all take care of one another. So if someone comes in and starts telling my staff about one of my best shops, we'll call that shop, we'll get the paperwork, we'll get the car fixed, and then we'll all sit down together and make it happen. And there's people that do that for my shop as well. So it is a fraternity of older guys. All of us are in our 60s. All of us have been working on cars. All of us have been from points and condensers to sequential port fuel-injected motors with no distributor. That encompasses 100 different levels of changes on how we deliver spark and fuel and make horsepower on cars today. But the fundamentals are still the fundamentals. That's all there is to it. My email address is mark@marksalem.com if you have a question. If you want to go to our website, marksalem.com is that. That's it. If you're in Tempe, my kids run our shop. It's called Salem Boys. We're on Warner and I-10 just east. If we're in your geographical area, you're welcome to visit us. Call first and get an appointment. If it gets towed in, we understand you couldn't get an appointment and we'll put you in line. But Salem Boys Auto on Warner Road, 1 mile east of the I-10, and we service the Ahwatukee and the Tempe and the South Chandler area. Anyway, mark@marksalem.com. Thanks for spending your Saturday with me. God bless you. Drive safe.